annual mid-major show on the CBB Central podcast. Appreciate you all joining us as always. This one's a lot of fun. We usually do these conference previews. We go one league at a time. We can't do it. We can't do all 32 leagues. That'd be quite the undertaking. We also just kind of understand realistically what the levels of interest will be. But as everyone knows, this is a podcast that does pay attention to the minutiae everywhere. Yes, Brad has been known to take his shots at the mid-majors, but I still think you are better than most about being attentive. And I think more often than not, you're usually on the right side of it when you're criticizing the majors.
I mean, this year, I think the beacon of criticism is going to land on Florida Atlantic, because you have people who think they're like an elite team in college basketball. You have people who think they're, you know, Davis and Martin are like all American level good. And we'll see. I think they're more of a top 25 team. I think those guys are more of, you know, very good pieces as a, you know, maybe Davis is a top 100 guy and Martin close, but not like all American good, but we will certainly find out.
Yes.
All eyes are going to be on the Owls.
Yes. Starting from opening night when they play Loyola Chicago in the city of Chicago at Wintrust Arena as part of the Barstool Invitational. You can count me in for that one. Lots to get to throughout the mid-major landscape. That's certainly a storyline we will be watching. We will start with the AAC. So we are going to give somewhat in-depth breakdowns of the AAC, the Mountain West, the Atlantic 10, the WCC, in that order. And then we will talk big picture about some of the teams outside of those four leagues that we feel like have a chance to move the needle, right? We can't go through every league. We just don't have the time. But we will have some of those one bid league teams. So if you want to have a group to track, we'll throw a few on your horizon here, or on your radar rather. So that being said, let's get into the American. That's where we'll start. New look league. A lot of those teams moving up from Conference USA. Conference USA was coming off of a banner year, and a lot of those programs are now American Conference schools. FAU obviously off the Final Four, North Texas off winning the NIT, UAB off of a Final Four in the NIT. They're all up here. But the league still, I think, now officially established itself in mid-major lane when we talk about putting, you know, we remove the brand of Houston, the brand of Cincinnati, even the brand of Central Florida, which is a big-time football brand, and replace them with all these Conference USA schools. There's no doubt this feels much more mid-major than high. I mean, I don't think the bottom half of the AAC felt high major anyway, and now that bottom half is more like the middle.
And I mean, this league went under such a transformation. I mean, you know, the fact that San Antonio and Charlotte and Rice and, you know, all these teams were added in that you think are firmly mid-major, replacing the Houston, the Cincinnati, you know, the teams that you would have reasonable debate whether they were actually mid-major or not. Obviously, they're Houston with them getting one seeds and everything. But yeah, this league is firmly mid-major at this point, you know, which is kind of a shame. I mean, one bid is not off the table. I know people love Memphis and love the scores that they brought in. We've touched on Memphis a million times. But I think there is certainly a possibility. No DeAndre Williams, no NCAA tournament for Memphis.
Yeah, so it is quote-unquote mid-major this year, but I think the top is certainly quite strong with these two teams, FAU and Memphis. At least like in terms of intrigue, if nothing else, right, Brad? Like, two teams are legitimately very interesting. Probably two of the 15 or so most interesting teams in college basketball, just because of the circumstances here. And obviously there's history between them after the NCAA tournament game. But I think starting with FAU, because FAU is the talk of the town you mentioned at the top, the question you really have with any Cinderella is, how good were they last year versus how much do they strike, you know, luck in the NCAA tournament, right? And my view is that no one would be ranking Florida Atlantic as a top 10 team in the preseason had they lost to Memphis in a game that really could have went either way in the first round, right? They might be getting some back-end top 25 votes. They might be like the mid-major taste of the month and be 22nd or 23rd. I have them like 16th, so I'm a little bit higher than that, but a little lower than obviously some of the buzz. I mean, I think the rankings that have FAU in the top five are just setting them up to fail, right? Everyone you talk to who's been a part of a run like this, and I've talked to a lot of people who were part of that Loyola Chicago run in 2017. You know, you can ask people who were around VCU, and you know, the list goes on and on, right? Like the immense pressure that those teams felt the next season, every single night, it was a weight that they couldn't carry, because you're being expected to be a team that just far exceeds the talent level here, right? Like John L. Davis and Elijah Martin are two like fringe G League elite camp type players, right? Like John L. played in it, Elijah didn't. Like they don't have NBA talent. They have two very good college wings. They have steadiness in the backcourt with Greenlee and Nick Boyd. Nick Boyd sounds like he's made a jump. And they have the two bigs, Rosado and Vlad Goldin, who were good enough to hang in March, right? This is a team that without question has the potential to make another March run. But can we really put, oh, this is truly one of the elite teams in college basketball on them? I think that's probably unfair. So I have them at 16 or 17. I think it's a more realistic place to come in. You know, on the other hand,
they're bolstered by the strong analytic numbers.
Correct.
That's what, you know, some of these like the Wyomings and the Drakes of a couple of years ago didn't have. Whereas on paper they had maybe comparable rosters and comparable talent. I mean, people loved Hunter Maldonado and Grant EK, and kind of that supporting cast.
Yeah, FAU did enter the NCAA tournament last year at 23 in KenPom. They beat UAB in the championship game 78-56. Right, this team was a wagon. They were really good.
But in terms of the roster, to me it feels like this is a, you know, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts.
Yes.
And this team isn't overwhelming in talent level, especially as in, you know, it's not a huge move up anymore, but it is a move up to the AAC. I think that 23rd KenPom ranking is, as people working backwards and saying, well, therefore, John L. Davis and Elijah Martin must be All-American.
Right. I'm not quite there. I agree with that. I think the question that will be most interesting is like one, like once they face some adversity, which they will, right? They're playing a much harder schedule this year in the non-conference. They're in the Orlando tournament with a bunch of high majors. They play Illinois on a neutral court. They play Arizona on a neutral court. They have this Loyola game on a neutral. I think they play St. Bonaventure on a neutral. Like this team will be tested. And I'm just so curious to see how they respond when they take a couple on the chin, right? Like FAU is going to lose a couple games. They're probably going to fall out of the top 25 at some point. Will this incredible culture that Dusty May clearly built, right? Like, I know that's an impossible thing to measure, but I think you look clearly at one, how they played for one another last year, and two, their willingness to all come back and not chase. Oh, what can I get NIL wise? What can I do? Right? Like these guys all decided to stick it out for one more and believe that they can go win a championship, right? This group has a really strong culture. How will that culture handle getting beat by 15 against Arizona, right? Let's say that happens, right? How will that culture handle getting, you know, hitting a bump in the road mid-season and losing to Bonaventure, right? Those are games that good mid-majors will lose, right? Those are good teams. St. Bonaventure has a very good roster. We'll get to them in a minute. But I'm just curious to see how they respond to it, given all the attention that will be there. But, if the question is, can FAU replicate what they did last year? The answer is yes, from like an analytics standpoint. I don't know that they can replicate it in terms of go to a Final Four. I don't know that they can replicate it in terms of, you know, lose four games all year. But from a pure, like, can they be a top 25 level team? Yes, they can do that. Anything more than that is probably unfair.
I put them at 24, which you might say, well, that's too low because they were 23rd and they, you know, basically went back, but.
So on the Memphis front, we'll transition there. And Memphis is more talented than FAU. I don't think that's really much of a question, right? They have an incredibly old, incredibly experienced team. Javon Quinterly from Alabama, Caleb Mills from Florida State, David Jones from St. John's, Jaquan Walton from Wichita State, Jordan Brown, Louisiana. I mean, shoot, they even have potentially DeAndre Williams, right? That's the big question looming. Will they get DeAndre Williams for another year? We're going to operate here as though they do not have him, because it would require the NCAA reversing its current stance, which is that DeAndre Williams is out of eligibility. But obviously, he's a huge difference maker. First of all, he's like 4 years older than everyone else in college basketball. He is truly a man amongst boys. But he's also one of the best big men in the country. He's highly skilled. He's very, very gifted with the ball in his hands. He can play. You can play through him as a four. You can play through him as a five. He does a lot of things for you. If you don't have him, I don't think you are lacking in talent, but all of a sudden you are just a team of five new players being meshed together by a coach who clearly over the years has struggled to piece it together early, right? And for a team that's going to get tested in the non-conference, that is going to need to do a little bit in the non-conference to make sure it gets in the NCAA tournament, given its league, that's not a great recipe, right? But I still think this is a top 30-ish team, even without DeAndre Williams, just based on the roster. I mean, obviously there's some head cases here, but Javon Quinlan is, you know, in the rotation on a, you know, number one overall seed last year. Jaquan Walton can really score. Caleb Mills can really score. Like, they've got wing talent. Like, they have the pieces. It's just, to me, how does it mesh together, and what happens with Williams?
I have him as a top 50 team, but top 30 is too high for me. Obviously, without Williams. You know,
They
have some great scorers, right? But David Jones and Caleb Mills are reclamation projects. Quinterly hasn't lived up to the best player on a good team yet. You know, he was good at Alabama. He was a contributor. It sounds like Jaquan Walton's going to be awesome. Foreign tour, he played as much as anybody. Looks like he's going to be a star, kind of out of nowhere for Memphis. But, you know, between Mills, Jones, Quinterly, I mean, it's a lot of scoring and guys in Jones and Mills who the past couple years, they haven't lived up to both previous and their teams weren't very good.
I will say this. I think Penny Hardaway did a much better job last year when he was dealing with all vets, right? And I was worried when I saw the original freshman class, which was much bigger. They've had tons of attrition there. I was worried that Memphis was just going back to the same old shit with Penny. It's like, all right, we're going to bring in a bunch of 18 and 19 year olds. They're going to be behind the eight ball in college basketball. It's going to take them too long to get acclimated, and then they'll be good down the stretch, right? Last year, they were all like, this was a very old team in 2022-23. I mean, you go through this lineup, they were starting Kendrick Davis, fifth year, Alex Lomax, fifth year, Elijah McCadden, fifth year, DeAndre Williams, you know, a gazillionth year, Malcolm Dandridge is old, Chandler Lawson is old. Like, this whole team was vets, and I think it helped them a lot. And I do think, like, and if you look, I mean, they started better last year. Yes, they had a couple heartbreaking losses, but this team started, you know, 11 and 3. They had a good win over A&M in the non-conference. They beat Ole Miss, Stanford, Nebraska, VCU, Vanderbilt, all in the non-conference, Auburn as well. Like they played a tough schedule. He navigated it pretty well, had no bad losses. I guess St. Louis wound up being a not great one, but that's just, that team was way more talented than its record. I thought Penny did his best coaching job last year, and I think there's a chance that continues into this year, but it does feel talent-wise like there's a pretty big gap between those teams and the rest of this American Conference, though. Brad, would you agree?
Yeah, because, I mean, you have Tulane, which has an interesting roster, and I guess they did well on their foreign tour. Colby King is a guy who I think Rothstein tweeted about every time he went to St. John's, how impressive he was. He never really popped as a freshman. But he's probably their starting point guard, and then they bring back the rest of their starters pretty much. Yeah. Obviously losing Jalen Cook and King stepping in for him. So they have a decent amount of continuity. You know, Jalen Forbes is one of the best players in the conference. You know, he's an all-conference guy. And then we'll see how King is at point guard, but there's some reason for optimism there.
Yeah, I just view them more as a team that stagnates without King, without Jalen Cook, excuse me. Cook. Like, I like King. I like they got Greg Glennon from Michigan. They also had another transfer who was like all SoCon, Asher Woods from VMI. Right, like they've taken some good calculated risks, and I think we both think pretty highly of Ron Hunter. But to me, this team just kind of sits around 100th nationally again.
Then you UAB, which has some of the best JUCO talent in the country, with Coleman and Lindenberg are both, I think, top five JUCO players. They have a deep roster. They have Eric Gaines back, who's the best player.
Alejandro Vasquez, huge get. James White from Ole Miss.
Someone who could have broken out of Ole Miss, people thought, you know, he's known as a big scorer. So they have a lot of depth.
Barry Dunning from Arkansas finds his level. That's a good one, the small ball four type.
The league is not too interesting. I mean, we had the thing with Temple with it. They're broke. Which is
100,000 in NIL. That won't do it.
Not super surprising, but at the same time, like, they were good for a long time. I figured they'd have more fans. But who knows?
I will flag the one team that I actually think will be very interesting this year is SMU. I have SMU fourth in this league, top 100 team in my opinion. First of all, you have Zirk Phelps. Zirk Phelps was awesome last year. That team was terrible, but man, can he score. Like, he is, if he had portaled and there was a lot of interest, he is like high. You know, he could have went anywhere in the country. You know, dealt with super volume last year. He's long. I think he's a guy who will emerge onto NBA radars. They also built up this backcourt around him, though. They got Chuck Harris from Butler, double-digit scorer. I always thought he was a guy who took blame for a bad situation. Like, that guy can make tough shots. I'm a Chuck Harris fan. I'm a Chuck Harris believer. And they also added B.J. Edwards from Tennessee and Denver Anglin from Georgetown, who both are guys, and we've talked about this archetype, right? Like, you're basically getting three or four free years of guys who would have been great recruits for them out of high school, right? SMU is reaching to get a Denver Anglin, reaching to get a B.J. Edwards. Instead, they get him after a year when they didn't play. They got Tyreek Smith in from Oklahoma State, athletic forward, you know, just a guy who can eat minutes up front. Like, I think this team is much improved under Rob Lanier, and I think they have a chance to be, you know, I think there's a world where this is a postseason team. Put it that way.
So I'm not a Chuck Harris guy. You know, he's someone who got a lot of, I guess we'll call it hype. I mean, people are saying he was going to be Butler's best player. He's going to be a borderline all-conference guy. I mean, he's a fine, you know, he'll hit some threes. He'll average 10, 11 points a game, which, you know, that could be a nice situation next to Phelps. But I don't think he's a game changer for you. Anglin is supposed to be like a lights out shooter. Like, in high school, he was like elite shooter. Any traction in Georgetown?
This team has some awesome shooters, right? Harris can really shoot it. Anglin can really shoot it. Phelps can make shots. Like, I'm intrigued here. I think they're way more interesting than the rest of the league, right? Like,
and I've seen Edwards play in AAU. He played with Quante Barry. He's now off the Temple in the AAC as well. He's a scoring guard. He has good size. The game I watched, he got high and had like 20 something points. Those are some nice takes. In terms of the team overall, they kind of blew it with a pretty talented roster last year as well. So I have them in the 70s. So you
think they were talented last year?
They definitely were on paper. We definitely had the same discussion last year, talking about Samuel Williamson breakouts and Xavier Foster.
Yeah, well, Foster was a bust. Yeah, I don't know. I think if you look at their guards, like, other than Phelps last year, it was really underwhelming. They should be much better there. They had Williamson, he was fine. And then they were just undersized because Foster never really made it. So
he was such a good recruit. Just never panned out. But yeah, because they had Zach Nuttall was right. He was a
Sam Houston
transfer that was like the player of the year in that conference. And
yeah,
they had they had Jefferson Koulibaly was someone who people really liked, and so yeah, they had a bunch of guys. And we had the same discussion last year.
A few other teams just kind of worth noting. Charlotte is an interim coach situation. They sneaky won the CBI last year, but you know, lose a couple of key pieces like Bryce Williams and Ali Khalifa. I think this team is probably near the bottom. East Carolina with Bobby Pettiford and Cam Hayes, a couple of high major guys in the backcourt.
And Quentin Jabuji.
Yes. To Tennessee.
Tennessee, following Schwartz.
Yeah. New coach at North Texas, Ross Hodge, completely new roster. Feel good about that hire. Just think it might take some time. South Florida, Amir Abdur-Rahim, felt really good about that hire. I think they'll be sneaky. I don't know if they'll, you know, I don't know if they're top 100 team, but could they be as good as Kennesaw was last year, like 130s? Yeah, that's probably a top half team in this league. Tulsa was a disaster last year, but sneaky might not suck. Added Kobe Williams and Keaston Willis from La Tech, guys that Eric Conkle had already coached, completely flipped the roster and needed it. Hot seat Steve Henson at UTSA. And then Wichita with Paul Mills incoming. I think we both thought that was a solid hire, but the roster building has been a little underwhelming. I wonder if they're running into some similar NIL issues, which would be a bit of a surprise, but you never know.
I mean, you go 10 years ago, and SMU has Larry Brown, and they're very good. Wichita State's, like, undefeated.
Yeah.
Temple made the tournament. I think they were, like, a 7 seed. I mean, Charlotte had some good teams back then, maybe not 10 years ago, maybe a couple more, but I remember watching them play in the NIT at the Dunk. That was a good team. I think that was back when they were in the A-10. I mean, Tulsa had some good teams back then, and largely it's all gone.
Yes. Tulsa had Matt Large's team.
Yeah.
Frank Haith.
They had Jordan Clarkson at one point, and Shaq Harrison. They had NBA players. I mean, South Florida, probably 11 years ago, right? They had the team with Augustus Gilchrist and Ron Anderson and Anthony Collins, Victor Rudd. That was a very fun team to watch as well. Made, I believe, the second round of the NCAA tournament.
Yeah. Anything else on the AAC? I think this is probably a two-bid league. FAU and Memphis, the other teams don't really – I don't see another team that has a realistic at-large path. Maybe UAB does it, but that feels like a bit of a stretch.
Well, I mean, like, you know, the SMUs in the two lanes, like, there's like 30 teams that I'd rather put in the tournament ahead of them in rankings.
Yeah.
But, like, it's not, like, inconceivable that they have a nice year and put it together. But
yeah. No, I agree with that. All right, next we have the Mountain West. Mountain West last year, another four bids. Needed that NCAA tournament breakthrough and finally got it with San Diego State. All the way to the national championship game where they lose to UConn. This league just, again, the caliber of the coaches has been so strong. Even with some turnover here, like Utah State losing Ryan Odom, replace him with a really good hire in Danny Sprinkle. I think you just feel good about where the league is right now. They hold on to San Diego State after the realignment circus. It seemed like for sure they were out the door. They announced that they were leaving but didn't have the destination yet. That TV deal for the Pac-12 never came, and so San Diego State stays in the Mountain West. And I think this league is in good shape to get 3-4 NCAA tournament bids once again. I think we've proven, again, some of these teams have really struggled once they've gotten there, but we've proven that the Mountain West teams are having good enough non-conferences and then just beating each other up to make the NCAA tournament, right? I mean, if you look, Nevada is a good example of this last year. And yes, they did just sneak in. But Nevada, in its non-conference last year, who did they beat? Nevada beat Utah Tech, Grand Canyon. So Grand Canyon is like not even a Q2 at home. UT Arlington, Tulane on a neutral, which might have been Q2. Akron on a neutral might have been Q2. Sam Houston at home might have been Q2. Loyola, they played at Loyola Marymount and lost. They played at Kansas State and lost. They played at Oregon and lost. They beat UC San Diego and Norfolk State. Like, they moved the needle not at all in the non-conference. They didn't get that big win. Right. But they went out and they beat some of these Mountain West teams. And the league has consistently had a lot of quad one road opportunities and a lot of quad two road opportunities. If you can win on the road and you can steal a couple of quad twos at home, right? And you can talk about top 75, right? So that's last year, that was New Mexico at home is a quad two. Last year, quad two at home would have been Utah State might have been quad one. It was right on the borderline all year, right? Like, they, you know, Colorado State road was bolstering that Q2 record, things like that. Like, that's a huge deal for the league. And I think that will continue. And because of that, the outlook's really good. So I think you start with San Diego State, flip the roster over a little bit, particularly, you know, on the wings. Losing Matt Bradley is obviously a big deal, but the starting backcourt is back with Darion Trammell and Lamont Butler, two March heroes. Bring in Reese Dixon Waters from USC, 10-point-a-game guy in that league. Not sure he's quite like a Malachi Flynn, Matt Bradley type transfer, but he is an impact guy, certainly at this level. They bring back Parrish and Ladie in the front court. And I know they're very excited about some of their young guys, BJ Davis, Miles Bird, Elijah Saunders. These were guys who sat last year, or in Davis' case were freshmen last year, or were in high school last year, that they feel like can really make an instant impact.
So basically, I think most people are going to have San Diego State in the top 25.
Yes.
And a few people, myself included, have them, I think I have them 33rd-ish, 34th-ish. I'll double check a minute. The reason I think people are kind of missing the mark on San Diego State is, but and, you know, we had touched on this a few weeks ago too. What differentiated them last year was they were so big, so physical, so athletic. They had like SEC athleticism and size in the Mountain West. Right, between Mensa, Keyshad Johnson, obviously Ladie is the one big man who's back, and then Arope. And on the wings, you had Matt Bradley. You had all this size, which made their defense so good. I mean, they're going to have to play small this year. Ladie, who played, you know, some four, some five, he's got to be the starting center, you would think. And based on the roster, you're playing Micah Parrish at the four and Jay Powell at the four. Parrish, you know, played the wing almost exclusively last year. Powell's a skinny guy, right? So they're not going to have the rim protection. They're not going to have the overwhelming physicality. But I do think they're still a good team. I mean, this backcourt is good. I think, you know, the whole Lamont Butler could make a million and NIL thing was ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen lists where, like, Lamont Butler is rated higher than Jamal Mashburn and Jalen House. Like, that is crazy to me. Lamont Butler is a very good player, but he can't, like, carry your team.
It's just people working backwards, right? Like, they're looking at their top 25s. They're looking at their team rankings, and and that's how they're assembling their player rankings, right? But, you know, the backcourt's good. And then Dixon Waters was a huge addition. I mean, he was a good player in the Pac-12. Maybe he hasn't lived up to his top 50 recruiting hype. But, you know, that's a good starting lineup. It's just it's not the big, physical, overwhelming team that we saw last year.
Yeah, I agree with that. I do think there's some, like, cultural stuff defensively that will carry over. But, yeah, if this team is a top five-ish defense, then somebody has really made a jump because they don't have the rim protection. They don't have the overwhelming size and physicality. But I do think they have a little bit more firepower. Like, this team should be better offensively. And I know Dutcher, I mean, honestly, they probably should have been better last year offensively. Right? Like, we talked last year, the whole sales pitch, why is San Diego State going from good to top 15 was offense. You got Trammell, you got Levine, you got Micah Parrish. And it didn't necessarily feel like that really happened, right? Like, yes, they had an incredible year. Yes, they got, I think, a five seed in the NCAA tournament. But they were still 75th in offense. Like, I guess the year before they were 167. That is a noticeable improvement. But it was a struggle to put points on the board. It was a struggle against FAU. It was a struggle against Alabama. It was a struggle against Creighton, certainly. That was an ugly game. They have to be better on that end. Like, they have to be a top 50 offense for this team to get where I think we've talked about them wanting to go. But they'll have some challengers here at the top of this league. And Boise State, I think, will be very, very good. The weaponry up front with Dagenhart, Cam Martin, and Omar Stanley is really interesting. And then bringing in Roddy Anderson in the backcourt from UC San Diego, that's a big deal. And New Mexico, I think people forget how close New Mexico was last year. I mean, New Mexico started 14-0. There's all the hype. They kind of fall off. But built in there are two huge losses without Jalen House. The weird game against Nevada with the flagrant one late on Udeze that swings the result. Buzzer beater at home against Nevada by Keenan Blackshear. Buzzer beater at home against San Diego State. Right? Like, you flip a couple of these results, and I know we're playing hindsight here, but like, this team was really right there, and they think they're going to be better defensively. I know they're still waiting to get Nelly Jr. Joseph back into the country. He's having some visa issues, but theoretically, this team will be better defensively with him protecting the rim. They're still going to be a wagon offensively with two outstanding guards. Add Jamarl Baker, add Mushila from Texas A&M Corpus, add Mustafa Amzil, who can really space it. They're recruiting at a high level, too. Jaden Toppin's a really good recruit. True Washington, I think, was top 100-ish. Like, talent-wise, this looks like a team you could trot out in the Pac-12 and not really miss a beat.
So both Boise State and New Mexico, I put as my last two teams in the NCAA tournament. So yeah. 45 and 46. Now, kind of what you were saying at the start. So I have three bids here for the Mountain West. There are enough, like, just good, solid rosters here where, you know, I think just comparing roster to roster, some of the teams that I had just missing the NCAA tournament, like Iowa, Oregon, Rutgers, I think I may take over Boise State and New Mexico, but the league is so deep that you're going to get those resume opportunities. You're going to get three or four bids. You know, the coaching is really good. Like, I think that the middle with your Colorado States and, you know, even like San Jose State is like a T-ranked top 100 team, I think, or close to that. So there's enough beef there with, like we've seen the past few years, this is going to be three or four bids. So yeah. I went with New Mexico and Boise. And first on Boise, obviously, replacing Shaver with Roddy Anderson is the main question here. I like Omar Stanley. He's a good, solid role-playing big man. Like, he's a good athlete. He'll rebound. His decent touch. Like, he's going to average like 8 points a game for Boise. But that's a good piece. Cam Martin, we haven't seen yet. He's been hurt, but he certainly has the pedigree.
He's unbelievably skilled. Unbelievably skilled.
And people love Dagenhart.
Yes.
Like, people have him as like a top 65 player in the country. I think he's on every list I've seen. Max Rice had a good year. Agbo is the perfect style of wing for Leon Rice. So Rice is obviously a good coach. He's had multiple tournament teams that he's built dating back to Derek Marks and Anthony Drimmick. So I think that this is a team that'll sneak into the tournament.
Yeah.
And New Mexico, obviously, yeah, they came so close last year. They were in it for most of the year that I think that experience is going to be beneficial. They got their two guards back. People love Donovan Dent. And their front court is interesting. It's probably worse than last year when they had Udeze, but it's got more skill this year. It's got more shooting. And between Amzil, Mushila, and Nelly Jr. Joseph, we'll see. But that should be good enough to, you know, to bolster those guards.
Yeah. I think you could divide the tiers in a few different ways. But to me, I think it's those three. And then there's three teams in the middle that I think have clear at-large potential, but a little bit more to prove. Right. To me, that's Colorado State, that's UNLV, and that's Nevada. So Colorado State, I have these teams from like 60 to 75 nationally, all three of them. Colorado State, I think, improved its roster quite a bit. Last year, snake bitten with injuries, lost Josiah Strong for the year to mono, had Isaiah Stevens out for the first month, had, you know, just guys in and out of the lineup the whole way. This year, they're much deeper. The big impact guy, they think, is Joel Scott, Division II player from Black Hills State, in-state kid, big body, you know, not David Roddy, obviously, but a guy who they feel can really make a difference at the power forward spot. They really lacked there last year. They think they'll be better defensively with Nick Clifford coming in from Colorado, Josiah Strong healthy, feeling late there, healthy. He had concussion issues last year. And then Stevens is one of the best point guards in the country. Pat Cartier, good big. I think they have a good group. I think they have a chance. Some early opportunities for them as well on the schedule. UNLV is like sneaky, just like a Big 12 team. Like UNLV has Luis Rodriguez, Jalen Hill, the Boone twins reunited. And then they're starting point guards, you know, a former top 50 reclassified point guard in Dedon DJ Thomas, who seemed to he was between UNLV and Florida. Local kid, really dynamic with the ball. So, you know, there's some intrigue here. I mean, they're going to really rock fight people, I think, with their size and athleticism. And then Nevada, I think Nevada takes a bit of a step back just because, you know, last year faded late. You know, they lose Will Baker, but Jared Lucas back, Keenan Blackshear back. That's a huge, those are two huge pieces for them. Hunter McIntosh solidifies the point guard spot. They didn't really have one last year. You know, I didn't love what they did this spring. Like they didn't, I was waiting for that one big addition and they didn't really have it. They added Talon Pope from Tulane. But, you know, I think I like this group enough that I certainly wouldn't be surprised if they're an at-large level team.
So we'll start with UNLV. Yeah, I mean, Jalen Hill and at least Caleb Boone were like good Big 12 players, like starters. It's just tough with UNLV because I know it's a new coach and everything. But between Marvin Menzies and Dave Rose, right, like we've seen this – or Dave Rice or Dave Rose?
Dave Rice. Dave Rose is BYU.
It's BYU, right. But we've just seen this so many times where they get all the flashy talent, you know, back when they were getting, like, five stars, basically. They got Good Luck Okonobo and Dwayne Morgan, and, you know, they just can never put it together. Seem a little snake-bitten. The reason I'm just – because I put UNLV, obviously, outside of the NCAA tournament, and then I think – just pulling up. I have them below Nevada as well. The reclassified point guard, even though he's super talented. I mean, maybe that won't make as much of a difference in the Mountain West. And this front court, I mean, is it like too much versatility, not enough size? I mean, that could be a nitpick, but I mean, Hill and Caleb Boone were legitimate starters in the Big 12. Luis Rodriguez was a starter in the SEC, and Keelan Boone had a great year last year in the WCC. So again, the talents here for UNLV is a year-end thing that we just feel burned. Nevada is interesting. I have them, I think, 60th. They bring back, obviously, Blackshear and Lucas is the two big ones, and then Coleman played a ton last year. McIntosh was hurt most of the year, but he was in the rotation when he came back. And then their bigs are interesting. You mentioned they got Pope from Tulane. Himes has been around forever. He's been around since Musselman. Coleman's the big JUCO 7-footer. Jazz Gardner's a good recruit. And then on the wing, Tyler Powell was a former top 150 who was stuck on a deep seed and Hall team.
Yeah.
So, again, this is a team that made the tournament last year. They're bringing back some of their best players, some of their starters. Blackshear and Lucas are studs, and they should be ready to mix again.
Yeah. Other notes on this league before we wrap it up. Fresno, Justin Hudson was on the hot seat last year, survived it despite not having a great year. I don't see where it's going. You know, they have athleticism. That is Enoch Blatchy from Arizona State, former five-star guy. Maybe that gives you a little juice, but he was like one of the least productive five stars ever. So I'm not necessarily like buying here. Utah State, new coach Danny Sprinkle, completely new roster. They had to flip it entirely. Didn't have a ton of NIL. Darius Brown comes over from Montana State. Jackson Grant, Montana State commit. Great Osibor, Montana State. So they did a nice job. I just don't think they have enough talent. I think Wyoming will be a lot better. That was like a what can go wrong will go wrong type of year for them last year. They added a D2 kid, a cool cot from, school in Texas. Then they had NIA All-American Mason Walters. Like they went everywhere for talent. I don't think they have enough of it, but they are better than they were last year and deeper. It's a big deal. So. Yeah, I mean, and just wrapping up the rest of this league, like Air Force, I don't see it. San Jose, I mean, Brad mentioned him a bit earlier, like impressive that they got to where they were a season ago. But Adrame DeYoung comes in at the five. I just don't see how they continue it losing Omari Moore, who was just everything to them offensively. I think they'll be fine, but I don't see how it's the top 100 team. It's three bids. It might be four. That'd be great if it is. Hot seat wise, I think it's really just Hudson. There's a few guys who could jump though. Nico Medved will be in the mix if Minnesota opens for sure. Could also see Dutcher potentially in there. Richard Pitino, I would be surprised if he's not in the mix for things if they make the NCAA tournament. You know, Arizona State would certainly be one that would interest him. Washington, he doesn't need to necessarily go in one area. I would say DePaul is like a low-key interesting Richard Pitino destination. Kind of a name. Big East. So we'll see.
They need more juice than that.
But you think?
Well, I mean, we didn't really touch on this with the AAC as well. But in terms of potential destinations, Dusty May, West Virginia is still in the cards. Or is that Andy Kennedy? I know he got an extension, but those are only worth as much as the paper they printed on.
I don't think it's Andy Kennedy at West Virginia, to be clear. I wouldn't rule it out, but I think Dusty could be. I think Dusty will have his choice, really, this offseason. If they have the year that they think they'll have, right, if they're in the mix second weekend, Dusty will get whatever he wants.
All eyes on Dusty. And then Nico to Minnesota. That's one that they should have done the first time. But I guess he does need to hit a certain level this year to make that jump, you'd say, right? I don't know if it's NCAA tournament or bust in terms of getting another job. But
He'd be in the mix as long as you're like NIT. It does feel like it'd be important for him to win, like in a noticeable way.
And then is this finally the year that isn't that Dutcher from Minnesota too? Or I guess David Rowling. I mean,
he has the ties, but I think at this point it's just too far gone.
Yeah, and then Leon Rice, Washington maybe? I mean, he hasn't moved yet, but and he certainly had the winning that would allow him to get another job if he really wanted it, but
I think Leon's kind of sticking it there.
His son's there.
Yep.
He hasn't figured it out, too. I mean.
Right. And like, the expectations are comfortable.
You know, what's it? Probably a tournament every other year is the expectation?
I mean, maybe I don't even know if that's the expectation there. I mean, that's what he's established is what he's doing. But, like, their resources are still very, like, mid-pack for that league. So. Anyway, should we go to the A-10?
Let's do it.
All right. Bad year for the A-10.
One good
A-10. What's so interesting, and again, you could do a whole podcast about this. I think the A-10 has generally navigated things the way they should, like league-wide, right? They've made some real investments in hires, right? They spent, I think, 1.7 on Archie Miller, 1.7 on Frank Martin, Travis Ford's making $2 million. Like, they, a lot of these like brand name, high level, proven winners at like a high level coaches in this league. They added Loyola. That was a good ad on paper. Things just haven't worked. I don't know why. I think part of it's just bad luck. Part of it's, you know, some of the coaches, coaching hires weren't great, actually. Like, I think the Frank Martin hire was not nearly as good as his resume would have suggested it was. You know, things like that. But, you know, I think the fundamentals are a lot stronger than the vibes, if that makes sense, for the league. So I don't think there's a clear at-large type team this year in the league. But it wouldn't surprise me if any of these teams get there. Like, I think – I don't think the talent is, like, so far down
Okay, how about a team like VCU that people will have between probably second and fourth or fifth, right? I think you're taking the UAB Tulane SMU over them, right?
Talent wise,
I guess just in terms of tournament probability.
No, because I think the A-10 is like it's more set up to do it, I guess, at that point.
Okay. You may continue.
So
you were saying that the fundamentals aren't as bad, right, as the
five. Yeah. Like, I think the league can get back, right? Like, I think there's a real like fatalistic view from a lot of A-10 fans. I don't really share that. I think it could get there, and maybe it just takes, you know, shit, like Dayton gets back to being Dayton, whether that's with Anthony Rand or without him, right? St. Louis gets back to being St. Louis, whether it's with Travis Ford or without him, right? Like, those weren't necessarily shitty hires. It just hasn't quite gone the way that the people, I think, expect them to at those spots. But I think for this year, lots of intrigue at the top. No clear favorite. It seems like a lot of people are going to pick Dayton just on the back of Daron Holmes returning and Malachi Smith returning. And it's worth noting with Dayton, right? They had so many injuries last year, particularly with Malachi Smith. You know, he's your star point guard. He's your guy. And he never was right. Kobe Elvis had knee issues, right? Like, they have the potential to have two very good guards and an outstanding big man. That's a good recipe, right? That's a recipe that can get in that large bid. Remember, this core largely was – I mean, I know they had Kamara – but like, this core largely was an at-large level team 2 years ago. Last year, it just took a step back. It didn't quite click, but they can certainly get back to it this year. I think the concerns are, one, you know, Grant just has not lived up talent-wise very often. Like, I think most years, with the exception, obviously, like the incredible 2020, I think you feel like they leave a little meat on the bone that year, right? Almost every year. And that's an issue. You know, last year, their, you know, metrics wise, they didn't do quite enough to be dynamic offensively. Again, part of that's the guards, but they just needed more juice. But they'll be in the mix. The trendy picks Bonaventure. I know I talked to an A-10 coach the other day who thinks they should be the favorite with that 3-0 in the trio. Good Lord. Micah Adams-Woods, Charles Pride, and Daryl Banks in the backcourt. All those guys proven, you know, higher level dudes, right? Adams Woods, a starter at Cincinnati. Pride averaged 15 a game in the America East. Daryl Banks, 15 a game last year in the A-10. They also have Venning and Farrell back in the front court. Like, I'm at least interested with Bonaventure to maybe get at large. And VCU is at large talent, but it's just working through a lot of new faces. I think that's the top three consensus right now.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I know Duquesne is someone who's in the mix, yes. I think, with the analytics. And I think Loyola is, I don't know if they're necessarily there for the analytics. I don't remember them being super high, but
they're like 65th in T rank.
Yeah. I remember at one point they were the favorite in the A-10. So I guess that's like your consensus top five there.
The only other team that a lot of people will mention is Joe's, just talent wise, but the analytics do not like Joe's.
So for Dayton, obviously, they have pretty much a consensus top 20 player in the country with Daron Holmes. Like, he probably would have gotten drafted if he went out in the second round, at least a two-way. He was obviously a great recruit. He's super productive. Malachi Smith and Kobe Elvis is a very good backcourt, mid-major or not. Like, that's a nice, solid backcourt. Bray has been around forever, and they bolstered their bench with a ton of transfer talent. And then guys like Marvell Allen from LSU/Georgetown, you know, when Kevin Nickelberry got let go. And then the guy Pedras that they just added was from Central Florida. So they did a nice job of improving around the margins and getting guys like Bennett and Cheeks and Isaac Jack in the portal. And then Nate Santos, who played a little bit for Pitt, probably the starting four-man, you'd think. So the roster looks like it fits. The talent level is obviously super high for the A-10 with Holmes in there. So that's why they're in first place, right? And then you look at Bonaventure. You mentioned that scoring backcourt, and then they bring a lot back. Like guys like Flowers and Luke played a ton last year. And they're probably coming off the bench, right? So you have that. And then VCU, which I mentioned earlier, obviously love the coach, love they're bringing in Shulga and Bairstow over with them, from Utah State. This team, I think it's going to be point guard play, right? Like Jason Nelson had good stats, but I know that you're not a Jason Nelson guy.
Jason Nelson, like the under the hood stuff with Jason Nelson is atrocious. Like if you look like deeper analytically, like he was a problem for Richmond last year, and not in a good way.
And the front court's interesting. Like they have a pretty good mix of size and athleticism there. They have a Gavoni special and Michael Bell.
Yeah.
Alfonso Billups was a top 100 guy. So, you know, they have an interesting group there.
I do think without Bama Steel, I think this talent wise is like really low for like a team that you might be floating as at large, right?
Well, it depends on Shulga and Bairstow.
Well, Shulga's, I think Shulga, like I had someone tell me they think Shulga could be an NBA player. I'm not quite there.
I mean, he's kind of like the what's his name? The guy who played for Fort Wayne, Conchar, right? That style of player where he's
right.
His good size, he gets a lot of assists for playing off the ball. He can create a little bit, you know, just kind of a nice glue guy there.
But let me float you this. Like, I have them as Jason Nelson, Max Shulga, Sean Bairstow, Kwani, and Roosevelt Wheeler. You could float in Billups, Lowell, Bell, whatever. Like, I don't know who's going to start at the four. But is that really a better roster than, like, Mike Mitchell, Cam Christie, Joshua LeJoseph, Dawson Garcia, and Farrell Payne?
No.
Right. And Minnesota is like outside the top 100, last in the Big Ten. I think VCU is a good example of a team, and we've talked about a lot of these. Like, they portaled a lot, but when you really look under the microscope, the talent level doesn't hold up to what it feels like they did while they were doing it. And again, VCU flipped the roster of a competitive top three team in the league when they lost like everybody. That's impressive. I give them credit, but I'm not quite there like at large wise.
But then like you look at Duquesne, which has, I think, a nice mix of the guys coming back, like Grant's back, and then the guys who they add in the portal, the Drame twins with that length and athleticism. Mohorčić, if he's good to go, I mean, he was starting for NC State last year. Saprazov had a good year at Georgia Southern. So that could be a nice mix of returners plus transfers there. And then your Ramblers, similar situation, right, where you're bringing in Adelakun, Watson, Mwamba, who are kind of early portal guys. I think probably Adelakun was the either Adelakun or Greg Dolan was kind of the crown jewel of that group, right?
Adelakun was like right away, yeah.
But then you got Norris coming back, who was a starting point guard for however many years. Alston was a nice pickup last year. So Loyola and Duquesne are trying to blend it. Obviously, Duquesne was much better than Loyola last year. But
yeah. Loyola, so I was at Loyola practice last week. I think they'll be a lot better. I'm not quite going to put them top 100, just because I think you have to see it when you come from 240 or wherever they were last year. But all the problems that were very apparent last year are no longer problems. They're much deeper. They are much more athletic. They are longer. You know, Dez Watson from Davidson, kind of a sneaky 10-point a game, A-10 transfer, who just winds up staying in the league in, at Loyola. That's the type of kid, like, especially you watch him, like, he's legit, like, 6'6", 215, athletic, really good defender, great culture kid, too. Like, that's a kid who could have went high. But all these kids that Loyola added in the portal, outside of maybe Mwamba, just because stats-wise, like, Greg Dolan could have went high, Dez Watson could have went high, Adelakun could have went high. They didn't. They go to Loyola. Phil Alston, I think, has a chance to be one of the better players in the A-10. These young guards, I think, are huge. So, you know, the upside to me with this group is is determined by, can Jaden Dawson, Jalen Quinn, Ben Schweiger, and Miles Rubin really, like, find a way to impact things? Because otherwise, they're just like a boring old team, right? Like, they've experienced, they don't have a ton of juice. Dawson's the type of kid, he can give him some juice. Really dynamic ball in hand scorer. Jalen Quinn, I've always liked, was a really good recruit out of high school. Miles Rubin was, like, the star of practice when I was there. Like, he is going to be a problem. Like, Miles Rubin will not be in the A-10 for 4 years. That dude is either two and done to a high major or two and done to the NBA. Like, Miles Rubin is 6'10", moves incredibly well, has incredible shot blocking instincts, can space it a little bit. Like, that is a, like, fully does not belong on this floor guy. So that to me is the swing right there, is can they get somebody in that group to really, really take the next step? Duquesne, I think, is going to be very good. And Duquesne has two outstanding guards in Dede Grant and Jimmy Clark. Savrasov and Mahorčić up front, the Drame twins, Trey Williams, like, they have depth up there. I don't think there's anyone else who's, like, really worth mentioning. Mason has talent. I mean, it's Tony Skin's year one. It's tricky. But they have, like, legit, like, Darius Maddox was eight a game in the A-10.
Keyshawn Hall's a cool player.
Keyshawn Hall, interesting. Has lost a ton of weight.
I think they're waiting on a waiver from Jalen Haynes, who would be the starting center. Former Virginia Tech guy. Yeah. Billups from your Siena. He was a nice player at Siena, right?
Elite defender. I don't know what he does for you offensively at this level, but just like a monster defender.
And then I'm not a Woody Newton guy, but he has played rotation minutes at Oklahoma State. And then Henry played a decent amount last year. Dinkins played some last year, and Polite was the starter last year as well, so... there's some optimism there. I've also seen some optimism for UMass's freshman class. And obviously Josh Cohen was a pretty big pickup. He had monster stats, obviously at the NEC level, though. And then Matt Cross and Roswell Diggins, we'll see how year two is. Keon Thompson played some last year as well. So they have a nice group that could break out. It's just young and it's very unproven. And last year, they should have been good last year. Like, that was a good roster last year. They should have been a monster defensively, and they absolutely tanked. And Frank Martin was yelling at people on Twitter, and it was bizarre.
Yeah, Frank Martin, like, randomly blocked the Curry Hicks Sage guy. It was a weird deal.
Well, Joe's. Obviously, Reynolds put a monster number.
Joe's has a ton of talent. Like, Joe's, like, it is very apparent when you watch them in person how gifted those guards are. Like, Lynn Greer is a dude. Reynolds is a dude. And they have some, like, elite, like, athleticism in the front court with Rashir Fleming and Christy Sandoko
from Providence. Sandoko is no athlete, but...
Big body, though. Big body.
He's huge. I watched a ton of him. Obviously, he was committed to Providence.
Supposedly, DeJir Haskins is also, like, an awesome recruit for them. So, the talent's not a problem. The problem is that last year, even that was, like, their breakthrough, quote-unquote, they got better. They still were, like, 170 in KenPom. And there's not a lot of confidence that Billy Lang, you know, that Billy Lang's turning it here.
Just in case anyone cares about Isendoko. Because, I mean, he was like a top 150-ish recruit, maybe top 200 recruit. He's super skilled. He can really pass. He has great touch. He can shoot jumpers. But he is just, he's a step slow on defense. And he's 7 foot, 260, whatever. So you got to be patient with him. But he has a ton of offensive skill.
Any other A-10 teams you really want to mention?
URI, I mean, we'll see if the changes were a palate cleanse here. Obviously, last year, the team's legs got cut out from under it when Anthony Harris was ineligible. He was obviously supposed to be a starter. And then Breon Freeman was like, his parents were freaking out at Archie Miller during a game and got him dismissed from the team. He was having, they sat him down for like a mental health game. That was a mess. In terms of their team this year, I've seen people really like House and Montgomery. Tyson Brown was a great JUCO recruit. Josephette Bilal was out until January, which kind of dampened some enthusiasm there because he's pretty big and pretty athletic. Played decently in the non-con for URI last year before he got hurt. I know you're a fan of their freshman. And think you're a decent fan of Courtright, too, from his time in your Metro Conference.
Courtright is talented, never quite put it together.
And they need a waiver for David Green. So I mean, talent-wise, this team does not jump off the page at all. Feels like a middle-to-bottom A-10 team, but they have a great coach. Maybe the culture is better. And at least they do have some good players. We'll see. But I'm not buying any URI stock, certainly.
Yeah, I think they should jump. I think the same. Like I view them and UMass similarly. I think UMass is more talent. But like I view them both as like we can't be this bad again, right? Like UMass is way too talented to be this bad again. Josh Cohen comes in. They have Jalen Curry, great recruit. Like they recruited a high level. Rhode Island recruited a pretty good level. Like these teams can't suck again. And I think for both their programs, like they have to show some promise this year, build some momentum, because you can't be bottom four in the league 2 years in a row, especially with where the league has been.
And then Davidson's front court should be good. We'll see how the back court is. We know I'm not an Angelo Brizzi guy, but he at least got to practice with them second semester, so we'll see there. St. Louis, they desperately need a waiver for Ezewiro.
Yes.
Their front court's in rough shape. Backcourt's pretty good, though, with Meadows, came over from Cal after doing an Ehab Amin of his own. And then Gibson Jimerson is a very, very good shooter. We'll see there. That's about it. I mean, Richmond's going to be bad, I think.
Richmond's going to be really bad. This could be the year that Richmond finally bottoms out enough to fire Chris Mooney.
Who would you like to see the next Richmond coach be if he bites it?
That's a great question. I think Takayo Siddle would be a great hire.
I was thinking about Mark Byington.
Byington would be very good. Yeah, agreed. I'm a big Byington fan.
Is the A-10 at a point where, right, like, I guess guys like that who are in the Colonial or the Sun Belt or whatever league James Madison's in now would still make that jump to the A-10. I'm sure the pay is better.
The highest level ones won't, but, like, the money is hugely different. Like, pretty much every A-10 job is going to pay $1 million+ now.
Wow.
The salaries have really jumped. That should help a lot.
What's next? WCC?
Or? Yeah, WCC. WCC. No more BYU. That's a big deal for this league moving forward. Lose a, just a consistent brand that had invested pretty heavily in basketball. Don't think it has too much of an implication for St. Mary's and Gonzaga, just because, you know, they both schedule so well in the non-conference, or they get the opportunities to schedule well, that like they'll have their opportunities. They can beat each other. You know, maybe it hurts St. Mary's marginally. I don't think it hurts Gonzaga at all. I don't know if it helps or hurts like the San Francisco's and Santa Clara's. Probably hurts marginally, but it helps them like win more games. So it'll be interesting. You know, with Gonzaga, we've talked about them a lot on the show. They've had a lot of turnover roster-wise. Added these two international kids late, Pavle Stasic and Luka Krajnovic. Just needed it with all the turnover they had this offseason. But I still think they're in good shape as long as Graham Ike is healthy. I know he's not necessarily fully practicing yet, but, you know, he's out of a boot, which is a big deal. And when he is healthy, he is one of the best bigs in the country. He's a guy you can throw it to. And that Watson-Ike front court is awesome. I mean, I don't think I quite realized that Anton Watson was an 11-6 and 2.5 guy last year. Like, he was a much more impactful offensive weapon than I think I gave him credit for. Now you have Nembhard at point guard. Like, I don't think this is one of the most talented Gonzaga teams, but the point guard improvement is a huge deal. The front court's good. They're going to run through their, you know, their league games, obviously. To me, this is like a four seed type team. I think last year they're a three. This year, step back, four or five.
I still like him as a three.
Really?
So, if EK is healthy, they probably have three top, 75 players in the country? There's been a great Anton Watson debate as to how good he actually is. I mean,
yeah,
I think for all accounts, with Timmy gone, even with him sharing it with EK, I think he's going to jump in stats. I think he's someone who could play in the NBA as a role man, you know, like a fifth big type, small ball five. He's not as good as Jeremiah Robinson Earl, but he's like that with a little more physicality, right?
He's just not as good offensively, I don't think.
But he's better defensively.
Yeah.
So maybe that was a horrible comparison then. But then Ryan Nembhard is one of the best point guards in the country. I mean, we saw it last year at Creighton. Now he has the ball in his hands. I think Hickman's a nice fit with him in the backcourt where you move him into a secondary creator role. He's got the size. He can shoot it. Venters can shoot it. Ben Gregg's a very nice piece off the bench. I could even see him starting and then bringing EK off the bench.
Braden Huff is also like a sneaky. They love this kid.
Dusty Stromer is like a top 50 recruit.
Big time shooter.
I think this is a sneaky like top 10 team. One of the best point guards in the country. A great front court. They have shooting. I think their defense should be pretty good. Maybe that's with Watson and Greg together.
I think they're in a struggle there. He's not like enough better than Timmy. I mean, he's a better defender, but he's not a great defender. Nembhard's small, Hickman's small, Venters is okay defensively, but he's not like a lockdown.
So T-Rank has him third in offense and 48th in defense. I don't know about third in offense. I mean, I just said that this is a top 10 team. He has him at 11. Third in offense seems a little rich for my blood, but they do have all this shooting. So. Who knows?
Yeah. There was something about last year's Gonzaga team that never felt that elite. And I just don't see how they're not like even worse in that, even in worse shape this year in that regard.
Because Ike is a worse Timmy.
Right, way worse.
And I forget who was their wings last year. They had Hickman. They had. My brain is telling me Corey Kispert, but it's not Corey Kispert. It is. Oh, Strother. Yes, they had NBA player on the wing.
Right.
I mean, Smith is at least a training camp guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're definitely less talented than they were last year. But they're better at point guard, and I think they're still going to have a huge advantage in their league. Their shooting is probably better. I mean, Strother's in the NBA for his shooting, but Venture's Homer, Greg getting more minutes. We'll see, but I still really like this group.
St. Mary's, a lot of people are putting them in top 25. Maybe I'm missing the boat, but I don't quite have them there. I think people are maybe underestimating a little bit some of the losses that they had in the front court, particularly Bowen. It's like a big time shooter. Logan Johnson was like an awesome defender. That was a pretty substantial loss for this team. But you do have Mahaney, who everyone loves. Marshall Lonis can really pass. Mitchell Saxon. And then I do love their freshman guard, Jordan Ross, comes in from California. He was a great, great looking guard when I saw him play last summer and last winter. Like he's next. Like, who do you have as their starting four?
I went with Jefferson.
Okay. I have Jensen Bratke written in, but I have no idea if that's like a. I haven't like read any St. Mary's preseason buzz, if you will.
I mean, Jensen played in every conference game last year. Played in pretty much every game. Obviously played sparingly just whenever Bowen sat for the most part. But that's kind of what the St. Mary's program does, right? It's big on promotion. Really, Mitchell Saxon was enough. You know, every one of their starters for the most part was like a bench guy prior to that. And some even like a redshirt guy or end of bench guy before that. So I also put St. Mary's in the top 25 just for the same reason as Florida Atlantic. Like, the numbers were there. They're bringing enough back. Yeah. Coaching situation solid. What I don't really understand is, so T-Rank has his team third in defense. Is that all Saxon? Like, or is that just a product of them playing less athletic teams night in, night out? Because there's no way that this defense has the defensive talent of like half the SEC. Now, they were sixth in defense last year, which still stuns me. I think that's a kind of an analytical fluke where they're just playing less athletic dudes and less talented dudes, but.
And Logan Johnson was like a legit monster defender.
14-5-4 last year.
Like, he had a great, great season.
Yeah, so I put St. Mary's at 22.
Yeah, I have him 27, so not far off. But not a lot of rationality when it comes to random cutoffs.
And so then, looking at the rest of this league, I put San Fran and Loyola Marymount in my top 100. Obviously, it's not too informed of an opinion. Do you view
Santa Clara?
I didn't go with Santa Clara, but do you view either of those two teams as potential top 100? I know you did your full 3 seasons.
I have all three of Marymount, San Francisco, and Santa Clara in like 85 to 100. I think they're all interesting. I mean, Loyola Marymount has three very good guards. Dom Harris, Gonzaga, Justin Wright, NC Central, Juice Hill, Murray State, and LSU. You know, they have the veterans in the front court with Leia Pepe and Lars Thiemann. They also brought in the UTRGV kid, Will Johnston. Like, they got good size. They have a kid, freshman, Aaron McBride, played AAU with Jared McCain's team, and that kid just like made shit happen. Team Why Not, like he was so fun. Loved that kid. So I think they have a good group. I don't know that they have like the jump in them, right? I don't think any of these teams have like real.
Todd Golden, San Francisco.
Right. Yeah, I don't think any of them have that potential, but they have good groups. I mean, Santa Clara. I saw people are trying too hard now. Like I saw some guy try to push Johnny O'Neill at Santa Clara as an NBA prospect. Like, oh, year three, here we go. After, you know, Pods and Jalen Williams, I was like, Johnny O'Neill is like a stretch four in the Patriot League.
I've seen multiple people talk about Johnny O'Neill.
He can kind of dribble, and he's like he's mid plus though. Like he's not an NBA player. There's been a lot of like random, you know, if you're going to bet on this like huge swing at Santa Clara, I think you'd bet it on Adama Ball.
Right, because he had so much pedigree coming in and just could not get off the bench. And Santa Clara has done it now with Pods and Jalen Williams.
Right.
I didn't notice until right now that they have Francisco Cafaro. So
they do.
It is the last from that, what was it, 4 years ago, the FIBA U19 that he played incredibly well in.
Yeah, this never quite got to Jack Salt levels of Virginia lore, unfortunately.
Yeah, his last chance for redemption.
San Francisco also, I think, has an interesting group. I didn't like the Mongolian Mike thing. It felt too much like a roll of dice to me. But
he's playing the three, right? He's not playing...
I don't know. They have an interesting group because they have Williams back. They have Malik Thomason from USC. Isaiah Hawthorne was sneaky good last year. They had Todorovic from SMU as a wing. The ball might be in his hands a decent amount. They have a freshman guard, Ryan Beasley, who's really good. They just have a lot of like really interesting players. Like Mongolian Mike, super interesting. The kid, Isaiah Hawthorne, super interesting. Barry Wong was really good for China in the FIBA U19 this summer. Interesting piece. And then I think the guy who's probably most interesting to me is Jonathan Mogbo from Missouri State. His on-off numbers are insane.
Barry Wang was going to go to Providence if Cooley stayed.
On-off numbers for Jonathan Mogbo. Sorry to cut you off. Missouri State was 11 points above, you know, 11 we're plus 11 per 100 possessions with him on the floor and minus 8 with him off the floor. So he's like a plus 20 guy. Monster defender, can switch, can rebound. Like he's really good.
And then Wang, yeah, he's like a 3-4 kind of glue guy. He shoots it really well. Nice roll piece in there. I think the flashiest part here is the backcourt, right? Marcus Williams and Malik Thomas, both high major transfers, and then Mongolian Mike. You know, those guys are kind of more scoring guards, and Mongolian Mike obviously 6'8", kind of Gordon Hayward type wing, who can really pass and handle the ball. Then Noonan's back, and you mentioned Mogbo and Giga Berria from Georgia Tech, so it's a nice group. Nice mix here.
I don't think there's anyone else interesting. Portland should be a lot better. They had like a huge injury bug last year. Tyler Robertson's back. They got Chris Austin back healthy. I think they'll be okay. I just don't think they have enough. Pepperdine has talent again, but it's Pepperdine, so we're going to pencil him into the bottom. Steve Lavin has like a low-key horrific roster.
I saw the three-man weave guys talking about that it could be like a sub-300 team.
Yeah, I think I put him in like the 220s just because it's hard to get lower than that at WCC, but like this team is all freshmen, like really, really young. And it truly feels like Lavin came in, he made all this noise in recruiting and with high school, with the portal, and now he's just completely like, it seems like he's fully mailed in.
Cashing those checks. They had, San Diego had like one good year and their coach got in trouble, right?
Lamont Smith, yeah.
Yeah.
They gave it to Sam Skoll, who was just okay. And the Lavin thing was like the dumbest hire on the planet. So, a few like bigger picture mid-major names to watch. I think we're good on the WCC two-bid league. Just trying to pull up my 1-362 document.
Just one thing, and I guess we could start with the big sky here. I was surprised. I don't think I've seen Dylan Jones on anyone's top 100 players except for myself. I was under the impression he was like a monster. Like, he went to the G League camp and maybe even the actual combine, and they played really well to the point that he would have gotten like a two-way. Unless I'm totally making that up.
I think Dylan Jones should for sure be a top 100 player, to be clear. Like, I have my holdups with him NBA-wise, like how good truly is he, but like, I think he proved the G League camp, but he is a high-impact college basketball player. Like, you put him on any high major, he's like a dude.
And like, you know me, I'm very negative toward the mid-majors. A lot of the ones that I saw popping up on people's lists, I didn't even consider, like, you know, and maybe I should have, like Drew Pember and AJ Mitchell, and there were a few other guys like that. But Dylan Jones was one who I had, and I don't think I saw anyone else with him.
Yeah, no, I agree. So a few teams that I have like pretty high in the one bid league limit range. I have Yale 67th nationally. Yale low-key was better than Princeton last year. Princeton obviously goes to the Sweet 16 because they win the league, but Yale was 65th in KenPom last year and brings back Bezembang, Matt Noling, John Poulakidis, and then this big kid, Danny Wolf, who played for Israel for U20 this summer and just like dominated. He could be their center. They also add Casey Simmons from Northwestern, who sat last year. Big time athlete. So that team is dangerous.
The Wolf one was what I had heard multiple people talk about, was that he just was a monster over the summer, and he was like the one piece because they're losing Jarvis, who's off to Florida, or maybe he's not at Florida. But it seems like Wolf's just going to step in there. And like, the Ivy could be pretty good this year because I know Brown's top 150 in T-Rank preseason. Princeton obviously had that great year last year. So it seems – and I think overall the league had the best roster continuity or minutes returning, if that's right.
If only they didn't have to lose Chris Ludlam and Jordan Dingle.
Yeah.
Both. And Paxton Logic.
Yeah.
A few other teams I have pretty high. Drake, I have 76th, retooling around Tucker DeVries. I don't think there's a huge drop-off here. 76 maybe is a little high just based on like where they've been the last couple years with the experience, but they still have Darnell Brody, and they added some really good guards. Ethan Roberts from Army is a big-time get for them. I loved him. 12 points a game as a freshman, Patriot League freshman of the year. That team, I think, is the class of the Valley. Northern Iowa will be right there with them, and Bradley as well. Indiana State could be in that like top quad as well. I like James Madison of the Sun Belt. They have 78th nationally. They have really good guards. I think T-Rank loves James Madison, too. They're 104 in T-Rank, but this team has, in their backcourt, just pulling it up here, they have Noah Friedel. They have Terrence Edwards, Michael Green from Robert Morris by way of Bryant, Raekwon Horton from Charleston. They were also like sneaky good last year too. So I have them top 100. I have College of Charleston top 100. Who else do I have in that? Like early names to know. Grand Canyon and Stephen F. in the WAC both look very appealing. Both look like top 100. I threw Furman top 100 just because they're Furman. They've been like 5 years in a row, which is like a wild streak, by the way.
As we're jumping around, any Kent State, I think, in the MAC?
I had them 101st nationally. It's pretty tight to me between them, Akron, Toledo, and Ohio. The kid they brought in from UCF, I think his name is Taim Freeman. He's going to be a dude in that league. Like a big body, physical, wing, like slasher. He's going to have a great year, I think.
And then Colgate bringing a lot back, right? Keegan Records is back.
Correct.
You have them top 100?
Just outside. That was more historical than anything. If you look, like, they haven't really been top 100, even with their really good teams. So Colgate was 115 last year. They were 117 the year before. They were 89th in 21, but that wasn't a full year. They were 118 in 2020. They were 126 in 2019. That was really when the dynasty began. So I had a hard time. I couldn't quite get to top 100. I know their offense is amazing. It's fun to watch, but kept them outside.
And then any Bryant thoughts?
About their team or about Jared Grosso?
I mean, I guess we can start with the team.
The team looks good. I mean, I like Pinzone. Timberlake's there. But I'm thinking it will be Phil Martelli for a whole season. And it will not be Jared Grosso in 2024. Like, it's – I don't think this is going to end well for Mr. Grosso. He's also behaved like a petulant child throughout this whole process as well. Like, tweeting out his contract has to be one of the, like, biggest loser moves. Like, what are you doing? Like, if I was his agent, like, if I was Evan Daniels and Jared Grosso tweeted out his contract, I would be like, you are the dumbest person that's ever walked the face of this earth right now.
You're like, what does tweeting out the what is he signaling by tweeting out the contract?
I think his signal was, you're going to have to pay me my money. Like, if you want to fire me, you're paying my extension. Which obviously is not true because he's not getting fired for performance.
But any ideas of like a hot assistant coach that could be the next Bryant guy?
Well, I think Martelli has a good chance to get the job. If they do okay this year.
I mean, they have Earl Timberlake. They have Pinzone is very good. Yeah. He had like a COVID issue at St. John's and stuff, but like he's a very good player and he's got great size. Right. Sheriff Gross Bullock is very good.
From a resource standpoint, they won't be able to get Lamont or Luke Murray. They could get Ivan Thomas. Providence? No, not
Ivan Thomas.
Georgetown. Huh?
I said Ivan Thomas?
People like this guy. I heard good things about Ivan Thomas. Is that an issue? Should I not be high on Ivan Thomas? What's the deal?
One of the hardest that I've laughed in like the past 7 months is when he posted like a goodbye to Twitter. And he was like, I want to thank the Providence restaurant community for embracing me.
Hey, come back to the state.
The Bryant is like 10 minutes away from Providence.
You can get back to the restaurants, you know.
Oh, my God. I don't think he was always thought of as a great assistant coach.
I had a few people flag him as like a riser. Maybe they're biased or something.
I know Cooley wasn't a big fan of him when he first hired him. Let's put it that way.
I'm trying to think of other names in that like region.
What about Derek Kellogg? Or is that just too many chances?
Yeah, it's too retread to me. Wouldn't excite me. Is there any other base guys? How about everybody loves Princeton assistant Brett McConnell? We'll slide Brett McConnell to Bryant. Yeah, that's the perfect like cleanup guy, you know. It's always whenever you have like an incident that requires you to change coaches, it's always good to just drop in a nice Ivy guy, very clean.
Are there any other mid-major teams you wanted to hit?
Just scrolling here.
Oh, Siena.
Yes.
What's going on with Siena?
Siena's very young. Siena's talented. Braylon Smith is going to have a really good freshman year. Michael Ealy is going to have a really big sophomore year. They just, like, they have so little proven production outside of Ealy that it's hard to be like, yeah, this team is going to roll. They should be pretty good. I think in the league, at least. I think the league is down. I think they have a chance to be pretty competitive within the league. But if they can get a waiver for Sean Dury Gordon, and they have him, they have Michael Ealy, and they have Braylon Smith, that's going to be a problem on the wing for people. And I know they love the kid Giovanni Emejiru from Sam Houston, excuse me. Big body, like 6'11", 265. Kind of an early, early in his basketball journey, if you will. So, I have been like the 200s, Siena.
Let's see. Who else are we forgetting to mention that would be wise to mention?
I'm just trying to think through. UC Santa Barbara has like an interesting roster.
If Zach Clemens didn't bail on them.
Yes.
I mean, they're still a very interesting house with Johan Traore in their guards, but
yeah, AJ Mitchell is awesome in the backcourt. Traore is like an all time like unproductive for a guy of his caliber.
He was so hyped too. He had like a monster peach jam, right?
Big off season, big summer in recruiting, and then did a big summer international trip line where he's like putting up huge numbers against like the Israeli national team. He's like, oh my god, and he like could not get on the floor at all. Yeah, they could be. I have them top 100. I think they could be pretty interesting. They also have Ben Stolzberg, who was at Creighton.
They supposedly liked him at Creighton.
Yeah, he can play. He wasn't patient enough. I'm trying to think here. Is anyone else like really worth a shout out? I think Eastern Kentucky could low key be really good. I know it's like a very boring float, but Eastern Kentucky was 150 last year, won 100 or 123 games, and brings a lot back. Devontae Blanton, Tayshawn Comer, like they have some dudes.
Leland Walker was a very good recruit. Pierce Thomas showed flashes at Butler. Like,
yeah, that's a good little take.
Someone that the message boards were clamoring that, why aren't we playing Pierce Thomas more?
Anything else?
I think that concludes mid-major show.
Somehow did it under 2 hours. Go us. We appreciate y'all listening as always. We've got Back to the High Major World next week. We'll have another preview. Stay tuned. A month away from college basketball. We cannot wait. Let us know if there's anything you want us to cover before the start of the season. We'll do our best to get it. Thanks all.